I'm Jeremy Nelson, and today we are talking with Tom Finholt, who is a professor and dean of the School of Information at the University of Michigan. We are talking about his work in convening a faculty working group to explore XR technologies for research, teaching, and learning, and how he sees where students can shape the future of XR here at Michigan. Coming up next in our Mixer podcast. Good afternoon, Tom. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have our conversation today and explore your perspective of XR across Michigan. And as I understand it, you were one of the key people to help bring together, you know, all the exciting work that's happening across the university that ultimately led to the XR initiative. I'm thankful for. But I'd love for you to share with our listeners, like, your role in this. Kind of how did it start from your perspective?
Sure. So it's pretty recent history, all things considered. So I was appointed the interim dean of the School of Information in 2015. And at that time, we still have on our external advisory board Jamie Voris, who's the CTO of Disney Studios, and he was constantly bugging us about augmented reality, and which is what we called XR back in the day, and that this was an important technology. Disney thought it was important. Their technology partners thought it was important, such as Microsoft, and that there was a great opportunity for the University of Michigan, both in terms of research and pedagogy, to jump into this area. And so that led us to explore who the likely participants might be on campus. And we orchestrated a number of lunchtime conversations, faculty across probably about 14 or 15 of the 19 units, and then a couple of the centers and institutes. And out of that emerged a consensus within a group of deans to convene a faculty committee, and Mark Newman chaired that committee, and it had really three elements to its charge. One, examine the research space around XR and determine what the opportunities are for the University of Michigan. Look at the nature of instruction about XR and what gaps Michigan would need to fill, and then articulate some rules of the road governing access to, say, donated equipment. At that time, Microsoft mm-hmm. was anticipating a fairly substantial in-kind gift of HoloLens sets to the university, which have been deployed, and like Michael Niebling uses those in his lab and so forth. So the result of that committee's work was creation of this research white paper, which I think in part guided the formation of your initiative and activities that were promoted and led out of the provost's office, such as by Sarah Blair and others. And also the architecture of the graduate study certificate that was proposed to Brackham Graduate School and ultimately approved to be offered just this past winter term. I think there were six or seven students already who were taking it. And that's built on a foundation of courses, including two that Michael Niebling on the School of Information faculty developed from scratch. So that really got our toe in the water. It articulated some principles about things that Michigan wanted to do. There were things that were in the mix early on that fell by the wayside. I'd say the big one was engagement with athletics. At one time, we talked a lot about using XR to augment the fan experience in the big house, something that'll be a little bit moot this year, at least.
sure.
And other kinds of sort of more production scale entertainment venue type things. And, you know, it was an interesting experience. We made a number of field trips. We went out to Microsoft Research and got the whole HoloLens kind of dog and pony show. You know, we walked on the Martian surface and so forth. So it was a fun time. I met a lot of really interesting people across campus. Very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that really drew me to this position and the role, was just like the broad scope and interest from many of the different schools and faculty already deeply into this space and exploring and learning. And to me, I thought there was a lot to work with here. And as I've explored a lot of other institutions and work around the country and in the globe, you know, we have a pretty unique opportunity here at Michigan, I think, with our cross-disciplinary interests and the graduate certificate. I haven't heard of anyone else with that. So that, I think that might be the only one as far as I know at this point.
Yeah. I mean, there are sprinklings of coursework. There's some at the University of Washington, for example. There's some at USC and some at Carnegie Mellon. But I think we might be the first to have sort of formal graduate program. And the way those certificates work is, you know, you're getting your degree in some primary area, and then you pick up this certificate as a kind of a 12 to 15 credit sidecar, and you can do some double counting to make it easier to get there. And we thought that the certificate was an important starting place in terms of knitting together the broader community. We'd seen this process work very successfully for high performance computing at the University of Michigan, and also for data science. So we were excited to do it, and I think it's going to be a big success.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that, and directing a lot of folks toward it. And you know, obviously, in the current situation, folks are asking, "Can we do this remotely?" And you know, I think we'll explore that as we move along. But it wasn't quite built for that yet. So as you started or got into this or got the advice, you know, why did you think XR was important? What did it mean to you?
Yeah, so to us, it represented a couple of important paths forward. So one was we saw it as a critical frontier in user experience. So the primary modes of user experience have been through two-dimensional interaction, you know, initially at the desktop, and increasingly on the mobile platform, our smartphones and so forth. And XR to us represented the natural extension of the user interface into the environment of things that we've seen in terms of underlying infrastructure of the Internet of Things. And so this was a natural parallel to that. To that development. And one of the things we saw missing in that space is that the whole array of toolkits and components and building parts that have accumulated over, you know, 50 years of graphic user interface development were largely non-existent in the XR space. So it was an opportunity to plow a green field, especially for junior faculty. It seemed like a low threshold way to really make their mark. In terms of application area, one of the things that was very exciting to us is that it has a broad array of application, and that was a great match to the University of Michigan, which is comprehensively excellent across a host of domains: medicine, engineering, natural sciences, social sciences, humanities, arts, and so forth. And in each of those domains, XR has a principal presence, and you can see that in the composition of the governing committee of the graduate certificate and of the signatories to that original committee that Mark Newman chaired. We had faculty from art and design, we had faculty from dentistry, faculty from medicine, from computer science, from civil engineering, from music and dance, from the College of LSA, you know, literature, history, of course, a lot of interest from the technology side in electrical engineering and in the School of Information, School of Public Health. So across the across the waterfront a lot of interesting opportunities. And then, you know, it was identified as a significant growth sector for technology development. I think that that promise hasn't quite been realized. We've seen some interesting breakout successes. Pokemon Go, I think, is the one that most people are familiar with. But, you know, I think things like the IKEA catalog are now commonplace, such that people don't even realize that they're dealing with an XR app. It's just that's just the way you shop at a place like IKEA. I think the pedagogical implications are vast, but not fully realized yet. Partly this is because the barrier to entry is so high for production. You know, if faculty want to develop PowerPoint slides, we have a 40-year legacy of presentation software to draw on. You want to develop your XR app, it's like go learn Unity or go learn the Unreal Engine or whatever. Right. And you know, some faculty are going to do that, but not not very many. And so we kind of lack that middle layer of enabling technology that will really allow this to break out. But you know, Apple in their iOS release of 4 or 5 cycles ago, they started including the AR toolkit, and you saw a flowering of apps as a result of that. You know, the Washington Post and the New York Times have units that produce XR content now for their media platforms. You can put your Triceratops in your living room with you and stuff like that. So, and there's a lot of exciting cutting edge technology companies operating in this space, both at the hardware level, you know, trying to optimize battery life against CPU performance. Form factor has been a big issue in Microsoft's design thinking, making the headsets comfortable to wear and so forth. And so I think there are a lot of reasons to be excited about. Clearly the entertainment companies are keeping an eye on it and investing because they think it may be the direction of mass entertainment. Certainly the experience with the pandemic suggests they ought to accelerate that program, but
broadly. I mean, I tested out the NBA through the Oculus last week, and it was interesting. Obviously, it's kind of a first-gen experience and kind of a blend between avatars and computer game-ish with a real like viewing experience. But I can see the potential. Like it's definitely well on its way. And the investment they've made is, I think, has really pushed the whole industry forward, is, you know, from Oculus and from Facebook, right? They're really driving down the costs, and you know, the Quest is in many ways a revolutionary device to bring. You know, I would carry one around in my backpack as I met with faculty across campus last fall, and it's like, oh, have you ever tried it? No. Boom, we're in VR in less than a minute.
Yeah,
it's very powerful, especially with some of those other schools we talked about. You know, I tried to meet with at least one person from every school. And, you know, some that, you know, maybe you wouldn't normally think of XR. You know, I met with folks from public policy, and, you know, I showed them a couple experiences, and they just began to ideate immediately. Oh, do you mean like we could create a whole simulation where students can go try out, you know, working a bill through Congress or negotiating? And yes. Like that's the power of it. So I see many opportunities, and as we continue to help try to enable more content generation. Yeah, that point you made about creating something right now is still a high bar, right? So we're very interested in, like, can we enable tools or procure tools that allow more people to create faster without a lot of deep C, C++, 3D modeling, coding?
Yep. Yeah, that's the dream.
Yep. We're getting closer. Well, so what are some examples that you've experienced that you really enjoyed? I think you started to mention like going to Mars, or you saw at Microsoft.
Yeah. So, so in the speaker series that you guys sponsored, I was very impressed with the applications that Dr. Courtney Cogburn has been developing to allow, you know, non-Black audiences to experience anti-Black bias and racism. I think that's that's an outstanding and very imaginative application of the technology. And even though, you know, not perfectly realized from a production point of view, the primitive experience I found to be very evocative and moving. So that I think would be one impressive example. You know, from the application side, the kinds of things that I've been impressed with. I think Case Western Med School did a demo application on the HoloLens, which was allowed you to kind of have the equivalent of Grey's Anatomy at your disposal while you're looking at, you know, say the body, and you could, you know, reference anatomical structures and so forth and kind of blow them up in that exploded view while you're looking at the actual patient or the bone or the vessel or tissue that you're concerned with. I like that the Mars simulation at Microsoft. They have the whole kind of four-car garage size room in the basement of, I don't think it's at building 90, it's in one of the other, right across the lawn from the research building. You put your HoloLens on, and then you can physically explore the space, which is basically about the size of the field of view from one of the Mars landers. And you can turn your head and you can see the horizon, the 360 view and all that kind of stuff. So that was really cool. And then the other application area that I've been very impressed with is for field maintenance and repair. So you know, it's the classic or canonical kind of example is if you're working in telecommunications, you're out in the field, you open up a Western Electric box from, you know, 1948, and
right,
you know, that thing was built 70 years before you were, or 30 years before you were born, or something like that. And then you can with your XR set, it can superimpose onto this alien technology kind of known references. It's like this wire right here, this is actually the same as what you're familiar with in the, you know, in the RJ standard as the ground and that kind of a thing. And I think Microsoft has a demo at the lab of motorcycle repair. So you're essentially, you can have the expert's view superimposed onto the bike, and you know, did you look here? Did you adjust that? Or in the medical care setting, you know, it's the experience where the resident is doing the workup, and then she steps into the hall with the attending, and the attending says, "Well, did you check, you know, like in a hand injury, did you check the snuff box?" It's like, oh, just that little space between your index finger and the thumb, and you know, the resident will scurry back in and do the inspection of that site. And that's the kind of thing you could imagine occurring through some sort of collaborative interaction mediated through XR. I mean, in terms of the kind of the blue ribbon demos, I think the Magic Leap one of the breaching whale and in the gymnasium is pretty awesome in terms of wide scale deployment. I think Pokemon Go is a very interesting achievement. I have a lot of respect for the stuff that New York Times and Washington Post have done with their XR tech. I mean, I would include in there their, you know, their use of those Google 360 cameras, which they send out everywhere.
The cardboard.
And we did our own little XR implementation for the bicentennial. We had a little game you could play on campus, and at various locations you could bring up some pre-designed XR elements. So if you went out to the autonomous vehicle test track, you know, the autonomous vehicle would materialize and drive around in front of you, and the lions would come to life at the exhibit museum or the old exhibit museum and that kind of a thing.
That's great. Yeah, that's there's so many. The examples you gave were great, and we're actually exploring some of those right now, particularly in medicine. You know, with COVID, they're very interested in how do they continue to allow med students to get their rounds and get their time in there. So we've got a upcoming pilot, I think, could be pretty transformative for med student education.
I think the coolest one I saw in the medical space was for was an ER app that would, because there's a big problem in the ER is patients come and go, and you don't know where they've gone off to. And so this would create a kind of an XR trace of the patient's path. It's, you know, like 5 minutes ago, you left your patient on a gurney at this location. You went to check on something, came back, and the patient was gone. Where the heck did my patient go? And you could look down at the floor, and you could kind of see an indication of the direction of movement away from that space, and then an indicator of the destination. And then that thing, you know, might be set up to decay, showing the, you know, the passage of time. So kind of a faint representation would be, well, that's where they were an hour ago. You know, a very bright, flashy one would be, it just happened, kind of a thing. So, which, you know, which I think speaks to the variety of UX opportunities here. As you're overlaying the UX onto the world, that creates all kinds of interesting chances to innovate and develop, you know, novel ways of interacting with technology. That part is really, I think that's super exciting.
Yeah, well, that leads into my next question, and maybe you answered it, but like, how do you see XR as an important technology for students and what they can bring to the space?
Yeah, so, you know, I think there's a couple ways of answering that. The instrumental way is to say for students who wish to learn to master this technology, they've got to have the opportunity to work with it and learn about it. So people that, you know, that want to become fluent in a 3D or a XR engine like Unity or Unreal Engine or what have you, they can develop student projects and perhaps work with external clients to develop applications and become fluent in their development and deployment. So that's one obvious area of application. I think a lot of the graduate certificate as launched addresses that need. I think there's a second critical need, and this one is often articulated by Joanna Milicek up in the College of Engineering, which is that these technologies can dramatically expand the experience of students. So she's a material scientist, and of course they're dealing with, you know, structures that are nano at best, and so no one will ever see them with the naked eye. And there are intuitions that you have to develop about these 3D structures, especially these, you know, crystals that are very difficult to gain an intuitive understanding with from 2D representations. And now she can, as the instructor, pull up a representative structure and then beam it to the 20 students in the class who all can independently manipulate it to start to understand features of its structure and characteristics of it as a material that would have been very difficult to accomplish previously. And similarly, you know, we're in the realm of materials. We can now render things that are not visible to the naked eye. In the context of the humanities and social sciences, we can create an experience that's not possible to replicate in the modern time, like going back to a thriving city in Asia Minor, or a trading port that was part of the Atlantic Triangle, to understand, you know, the heinous nature of the slave trade in supporting commerce between the New World and the Old World and that kind of a thing. And those could be embedded in game engines or some kind of gameful metaphor, I think could make it very exciting. And then I think there's the case where XR creates the opportunity to manipulate and work with things that are too costly or too expensive to provide on a mass scale. Like, you know, we're not going to be able to put each student in front of a precision-controlled machining setup. But in XR, you could imagine each student can, you know, have their own machine set up. And you know, this is the dream of the Deweyites, is that you would learn by doing through your immersion in these XR technologies. And you know, I don't think the state of the art is sufficient to support that widely right now, right. But that's definitely why there's a lot of excitement amongst educators about what these things could deliver, and that's, I think, significant in the mission of the public university. Is we want to broaden access to knowledge and also, you know, use our university as a platform for social mobility that happens through exposure and manipulation of things that would otherwise be impossible to do.
Right.
So I think that's really the exciting aspect of it. And I think there's a lot of interesting things at the margin, you know, the collaboration mm-hmm. support, people through XR technology referencing a shared virtual mm-hmm. space, you know, much as we would do in a gaming situation, we would be yep. in the rendered world. That rendered world could be the classroom, or it could be the lounge, or it could be mm-hmm. the operating theater, or it could be the yep. machine shop, or the interior of the jet engine, or the inside of the DNA molecule. You know, these are all places we can go. It's like having it's that science fiction thing, the fantastic voyage, you know, where we all get reduced down to sub nanoscale, and you know, hemoglobin is the size of a blimp.
The magic school bus. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff. Yep.
Well, I've tried a couple of those, you know, being working from home. You know, I've had access to devices, and you know, I've met somebody from DC, somebody from Greece, and somebody from London in a virtual operating room, and we did a knee replacement surgery all collaboratively, and it was very powerful, and you know, just opens up a lot of thinking and opportunities, especially as, you know, we're trying to teach students more remotely, and you know, kind of whatever survives on past the pandemic, right? There's, I think, there'll be opportunities to continue that distance learning through the technology.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked about all the exciting things, the great things. You know, what concerns do you have about the future? This technology, or what areas should we keep an eye out for or help shape?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, an obvious concern is that we don't allow the bias and systemic dysfunction that's present in real life to infect, you know, virtual life or XR life. And, mm-hmm. That these technologies be deployed for good and not for malevolent purposes. I'm okay with commercial application. I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, gaming companies shouldn't be able to benefit from them, but I wouldn't want to reproduce some of the mistakes that have been made with video games in terms of the, you know, the endemic, as some have called it, endemic misogyny and mm-hmm. so forth. Mm-hmm. And I think there's always a danger in a new field that is technology centric, that it will by that virtue create barriers to entry for others. And so, you know, one of my interests in the initiative at Michigan is to make sure that we reduce those barriers of entry so that there's more opportunity for expression and engagement that doesn't require the, you know, the 20 years of nerding out that, you know, that,
right.
that you currently see if you go, you know, if you go look at a development shop for a game publisher or mm-hmm. that kind of mm-hmm. thing. So I think that's one concern. Obviously it creates a avenue for, you know, new kinds of harassment and abuse mm-hmm. that could be experienced much more viscerally than would be the case through, you know, say text-based technologies and even video-based technologies. So all of the, you know, all of the issues we have with technology come to the fore here. You know, privacy, I think, is a significant concern, particularly if people are wearing these devices as part of their apparel or, you know, everyday
right.
glasses. We saw some of this with the Google Glass project. You know, who is looking at whom? What are they doing with that information?
Right.
How is it being aggregated and processed? So I think those things are all, you know, incumbent on XR developers as much as they are on all technology developers.
Right. right? Yeah, and it's we're keenly interested in, you know, laying the foundation for some of these areas of security and privacy into the projects we're working on to make sure we address that now, you know, even though it's easier to skip over that. We've seen that in other areas and other software development over the last 10, 20 years that has come back to cause a lot of pain down the road with data breaches and, you know, access to information and hacking. So we're trying to keep that forefront for all the work we're doing. Well, so what do you want to see Michigan do? What would you like us to do with the initiative? Like, where do you want to see us take this and go from here?
Yeah, so, and, you know, in the research space, I think the function of the initiative is to plant a lot of seeds. And then as things sprout and mature, determine which of those are pathways that look like they're particularly promising and, you know, identify those for more support and more funding, whether that's from the university or corporate partners or from, you know, federal agencies and so forth. I think it's a great model and one that the university should use more mm-hmm. often with these, you know, kind of small grants competitions that have low threshold for entry, you know, competitive, but not, you know, not NSF competitive. You know,
sure.
You know, 1 out of 20 proposals gets funded or something like that, or 1 out of 15. So that would be one. That would be one direction. I'd like to see the development of an XR production unit that faculty could turn to when they have ambitious projects to you know, develop entire course length mm-hmm. programs that would be you know, on platforms that students could access across a host of devices, from smartphone to purpose-built headsets. I'd like to see film and video and some of the other kind of back-of-the-camera operations become invested in this area and start addressing some of the production challenges, you know, in the mm-hmm. VR sense. You know, where do you hide all the gear?
Right.
You got a 360 view. There's no, you know, there's no plane that you can hide all the cameras and people behind. And we don't, you know, I think the understanding point of view, photography and cinematography is very different than, you know, what we're accustomed to seeing from, you know, DPs on motion pictures and stuff like that. So I think there's a lot to be done in that area. And I think, you know, we could do more to engage film and video in LSA. I think they've been a fairly quiet player for the most part. And mm-hmm. I think it would be interesting because they've got the whole book on technique and approach. I mean, all these things
right.
were invented at the turn of the 20th century to support motion picture production. And you know, a lot of those mistakes could be avoided for XR with a little bit of understanding. So I think that's interesting. And then I think there's a great role for humanists to play in thinking about how these technologies should be used. You know, the kinds of things that Dr. Cogburn was trying to accomplish with her demonstration applications is it, you know, can mm-hmm. you really create the sense of being in someone else's shoes? And does that ultimately change your behavior? Does that make you, you know, more likely to be an anti-racist ally? And are these, are there streamlined approaches that we could use to convey this information that would kind of, if you will, shock people out of their comfort zones and spur them to change their behavior, to hold others accountable for their behavior and that kind of a thing. I think that's really an exciting, I know our colleagues in LSA have been very interested in that. Sarah Blair in particular mm-hmm. has pushed that line pretty hard, which is independent of the underlying technology, which I think is important. It's important to have voices at the table that aren't going to geek out over the,
you know, right,
the frame rate of the headset or the the battery life of the CPU of the device and that.
Right. Yeah, no, she was working on a Uncle Tom's Cabin project we did with the folks at the Duderstadt Center for her course in the fall of 2019. And she was really interested in exploring perspective from multiple points of view. And so they were able to recreate this scene from the book, and you could experience it from three different points of view. And it was just her students, as they went through it, they just had a lot of interesting reactions to being the main character, being the pursuer, kind of being a bird's eye view, and just like the technology. And from a technological standpoint, that's, I'll say, easy to move the virtual camera around. But from the viewer, the person experiencing it, just opens up a lot of different affordances.
Yeah, so we've recently initiated a conversation with UMS about staging a virtual performance of some kind, and we've discussed the involvement of various corporate partners who might be willing to, you know, donate in-kind resources, particularly, you know, programming talent and code libraries to, for example, create a replica of Hill Auditorium, the experience of entering the auditorium, finding your seat, the preamble to the performance, you could actually hear the rustling and the talking of the crowd, and then the hush as the house lights go down, and then the performance unfolds before you. I mean, I think UMS is understandably concerned that they're not going to have the ability to stage large audience live performances really anytime, I don't think, short of 12 months, to be realistic. And so they're very interested in ways of maintaining connection with audiences and artists that that can be done in the virtual space. And of course, they're just all kind of novel territory for them. It's not really a thing that they're used to thinking about. I don't think a lot of them play Fortnite, for example.
I would imagine not. Yeah, there's some interesting work happening, you know, with some popular artists are doing performances on Altspace and other platforms. There's a new title called The Under Presents, and where there you can actually purchase a ticket to go see a live performer in a virtual environment. So you can navigate through it's all graphics, right? It's not 360 camera, but the avatars you're interacting with are real people on the other side. So there's just some really interesting ways to experience some of these areas that are difficult to conduct in a pandemic, right? Live theater, musical performances, large crowds.
Yeah. And I think these are the kinds of experiments that we need to be conducting, and we are the people to do it, because society is going to need these outlets. Our artists have to make a living. We benefit from the experience of their performance. If we're limited to just audio recordings or televised presentations, that's not really the same. That's not really the same thing. I also think it'll be a driver for technology development, particularly around three-dimensional audio, so that the concert hall experience is much more vivid than even you would get through stereo headphones.
Yeah, the spatial audio. We're working with Anil Kamchi in SMTD, and he's doing a lot of work in that space to try to make it easier for non-sound engineers to create that spatial audio in these applications. So some very exciting work. Well, I have really enjoyed our conversation today, learning quite a bit more about how we got here, and I appreciate all the work you've done and continue to do, and I look forward to where we take this.
Great. Well, it's a pleasure chatting with you. The XR initiative is very exciting. I'm glad you're serving in this role, and I think these podcasts and the speaker series, when it can renew, is a is a great thing for convening the community and presenting, you know, a set of provocative and thoughtful researchers for both locally and from afar.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Great. Great stuff.
Take care.
Thanks.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. Our vision for the XR initiative is to enable education at scale that is hyper-contextualized using XR tools and experiences. Please subscribe to our podcast and check out more about our work at ai.umich.edu/XR.